And we're holding on Kufvav Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, "Hamakabel sadeh mechaveiro." A person receives a field as an oris slash choicher, as we've been talking about throughout this parak. Lazora sa'orim, where the deal is that he's going to plant that. Where the deal is that he's going to plant barley there. Lo yizra enachitim. Then he can't plant it with wheat instead. Wheat takes more out of the takes more nutrients out of the soil than barley. Chitim, but if he received it that he's going to be planting wheat over there, Yisra'en and then he is allowed to plant barley there instead, because then that benefits the that benefits the owner of the land, that now it won't the not as much nutrients won't be taken out. Now Rashi learns that here again we have to be talking about specifically a choicher. We said earlier in the perek that most of the Mishnayos in our perek are either an oris where he pay where they split the crop by percentages, or a choicher where he pays a fixed amount in rent, but not both. And here Rashi says specifically. Specifically, we have to be talking about a choicher, because on the contrary, Rashi says if it was talking about an oris, we learned earlier in the perek we had an expression, tikhush arav lelikhush mara, better let the land be weakened rather than that the owner should be weakened, meaning, in other words, after all, the owner is going to be getting a percentage of the crop in the case of an oris, so he would rather get wheat if the deal was that he's going to plant wheat, even though the oris can tell him, wait, but I planted barley, that's better for your land. He would say, fine, but I wanted wheat because, I wanted wheat, and now that you planted barley, I'm forced to take that, and I didn't want that. So Rashi learns that in that case, so in that case, then so in short, Rashi learns that we'd be talking about specifically a choicher over here. Actually, Agos Agra points out that Amban learns the other way around. That with an oris, it would be also either way. It would be also to change no matter what. With a choicher, then we'd be talking about that he can't change to something that depletes the soil more, but he'd be allowed to change to something that depletes it less. So the opposite of Rashi as far as that. Anyway, Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's also to do that either, even if he was supposed to plant wheat over there, and he chooses to plant barley. Reb Shimon Gamliel says it would be also for reasons that we're going to learn in the Gemara. He's benefiting the land and benefiting the other guy. Nevertheless, Reb Shimon Gamliel answers it, as we're going to see. Similarly, if he received the land where he's going to plant it with grain, then he's not allowed instead to plant it with beans, because again, that depletes the soil more. Kitness easier and a tvua, but if he received it to plant beans, then he's allowed instead to plant grain. And again, Reb Shimon Gamliel also, and again, Reb Shimon Gamliel says it's also. Here, Agos HaGra points out that actually a number of the Rishonim have the Girsa the other way around. Now, we're going to see in the Gemara that actually it really depends on different places. In different places, beans versus grain are better or worse for the soil. But what the Girsa is in the Mishnah, talking about the climate of Eretz Yisrael, that we have in front of us, that grain is better for the soil in Eretz Yisrael than beans, but the Rif and the Rambam have the Girsa the other way around. That beans are better for it. It may depend, really. I mean, even in Eretz Yisrael itself, you have microclimates, and you also have different kinds of beans. Some of them, in particular, have. I mean, you can look it up. You can find certain kinds of beans, and plants like that have things that grow on their roots that fix nitrogen into the soil and therefore fertilize it. So in that sense, so those might be better for the soil rather than other kinds which do not. So it might, yeah. So there are certain kinds of there are certain kinds of plants that actually they have a symbiotic relationship with certain bacteria that cause nitrogen to be fixed from the air into the soil. So yeah, so it may depend on that kind of factor. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara says, "Omer Chista, my time with Reb Shimon Gamliel. Why does Reb Shimon Gamliel ask for any changes across the board, even when it would benefit the even when it would benefit the landowner? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says She'eris Yisrael lo yasu avla, the remnant of the Jewish people after all the various golosin will not do injustice, v'lo yidabru chazav, and will not speak falsehood, v'lo yimatz b'fiyam l'shon tarmis, and they won't be found in their mouths words or expressions of cheating, of dishonesty. So the point is, in other words, a yid has a responsibility to be honest. So if he said that he's going to plant X, then he can't go and plant not X instead. So just because of that, because a person has to keep to his word. So the Gemara says, Maisvi, then in that case, I have a contradiction. We learned this earlier in the Masechta as well. Megris Purim Lepurim. When you money that's collected, when the Gabbai Tzedakah collect money on Purim, and they're supposed to be giving it out to the poor people specifically for the Purim Sudah, Lepurim, it has to be used specifically for Purim. The Gabbai Tzedakah can't say that we're going to collect that money and use it for the general Tzedakah fund. The Ein Medavtekin Bedavar, and they're not particular with the matter, which has a few meanings. It means, in other words, they don't start thinking into, well, do the poor people really need all this money? Maybe we can give them only some of it for their Purim Sudah, and we'll keep some of it for other tzedakah purposes. It also includes Ein Medavtekin Bedavar, as when we give tzedakah, we're not, and for that matter, the Gabbai Tzedakah, when they give it out, they don't have to be particular who is actually poor to receive it. As we know, on Purim, Kol HaPoshet Yad, anybody who sticks out their hand, then we give them. Anyway, so it all has to be given out to the Aniyim on Purim for them to use for their Purim Sodah. And conversely, the Einar Oni Rashoim Likach Mehen Ritzua Lasandoloi, the poor person who receives that money is not allowed to use that money even to get a strap for his sandal, which is not rather than using for his Purim Sodah, Elim Ken His number Maimon Anshe Ir, unless he made a condition on that in the presence of the people of the city, where then, in other words, if he tells them in advance, or maybe not in advance, whatever, but he tells them that he wants to use some of this because he needs a new shoelace, then they can give him permission to, but otherwise not. Divir Rabbi Yaakov Sha'om Mishum Rameir, that's what Rabbi Yaakov says in the name of Rameir, and on the contrary, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Mekel, and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is Mekel, and says that that even if he does change, even if he does use some of the money for a shoelace, then Rav Shimon Gamliel would say it's allowed, and we're not concerned that the people are going to be makbid. So even though yes, they gave it for him for Simchas Purim, but he's allowed to change it a little bit. Okay, the Meiri points out we're only talking about a small thing like a shoelace or whatever. He can still basically get his Purim Sodah. If we're talking about something where completely he's going to be using it to get a new flat screen TV, for example, then not, because that's going to take away his whole Sodah. But the point is, in other words, Rav Shimon Gamliel clearly is not bothered by the fact that he received this money for his Purim Sodah, and here he's going to use some of it for something else. So obviously, it's not a matter of Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying, of course, a yid has to keep to his word, but not to the extent where we're going to say that the poor person can't use the Purim funds for something else. By the same token, if the change from wheat to barley or from barley to wheat or whatever is going to benefit the landowner, and again, according to Rashi, we're talking about over here specifically that we're a choicher, where he's going to give him a certain amount of whatever type of grain it is anyhow. And therefore,
a choicher gives him
a certain amount, a fixed amount of grain. And if the field didn't produce it, then he's going to go and buy it on the open market.
Oh, so,
so again, according to So the according to Rashi, so right. So according to Rashi, the point is then that he'd be allowed to do that in the case of so Rashi learns again that in the case of an oris, he would be allowed to make changes where they're going to benefit the landowner. According to the Ramban, on the contrary, an oris is not allowed to, and a choicher is. But anyway, the point is that so clearly, when Rav Shimon Gamliel says in the Mishnah he can't do that, it can't just be on the basis of that he has to be honest and keep his word, because we see from this case of the poor person that when it's a minor change like that, Rav Shimon Gamliel doesn't really mind. Ella, so the Gemara answers, Omer Abaya. So no, rather time the Rav Shimon Ella Omer Abaya time the Rav Shimon Kedemar. The reason behind what Rav Shimon Gamliel is saying is based on what my Rebbe said. Abaya's Rebbe being Rabba. If a person wants his field to be fallow, if he wants his field to become unproductive, meaning, in other words, in effect, Rabbah is saying, don't do this, don't do the following, because if you do, your field is going to become unproductive. Let him plant it 1 year wheat and the next year barley, and that change is harmful to the soil. Or 1 year planting it chassis going with the rows going in one direction, and the next year with the rows with the furrows and the row and the planting rows going going at right angles to that. So therefore, in other words, the point is, when he says, for example, he's going to plant wheat in it, what if the landowner may say, I want you Davka to plant wheat because last year I also planted it with wheat. Now instead the oris or the choicher is going to go and plant barley instead, and it's going to ruin the soil. However, the Gemara points out, that would only apply if you didn't plow and replow in between. But if he plowed and replowed in between after the harvest, and then he plowed twice, less than one, then there's no problem than planting wheat after barley or barley after wheat or planting in the opposite direction or whatever won't harm the field. Now, this is all according to Rashi. Tosfos has a problem with that because, on the contrary, that is what farmers do. They rotate crops. On the contrary, 2 years of the same crop in a row is what's going to cause problems. So Tosfos learns it's actually the other way around. When Rabba says Haima the Titbur Are, he doesn't mean like Rashi says the result of doing this, of rotating crops, is going to be that the land is going to become unproductive. On the contrary, if you want to have that the land is going to be more productive the following year, as if you had left it fallow for an entire year. Now, if you leave the ground unplanted for an entire year, it's going to regain its fertility because then no nutrients are being taken out of it. So on the contrary, Rabbi is saying, if you want like a shortcut to be able to do that, rather than actually leaving the field uncultivated for a whole year, what you do is plant it, go back and forth between wheat and barley in alternate years. Well, the same thing then, Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying. So you made a deal that you're going to be planting this with wheat. Last year, maybe the guy planted it with barley. And that was the point. He wanted it planted with wheat this year, because that way you'll have this crop rotation. You'll go back and forth between barley and wheat. Meanwhile, you're going to be planting barley again, and the problem is that's barley 2 years in a row, and therefore it's not going to be as good for the soil. It's not going to give it that effect as if it had been left fallow for a whole year, and that's where Reb Shimon Gamliel is saying it's also. Okay, we said in the Mishnah Tvur Loizer and Akitnes V'chol. We said if you receive the field where you're going to be planting grain, then you're not allowed to plant beans, but vice versa you are. So Masni Le Reb Yehuda Le Rovin. Reb Yehuda, when he taught the Mishnah to Rovin, Rovin by Reb Nachman, really, as we're going to have in the continuation of the Amud, so he taught him the other way. And Tvur Yisra and a Kitness, that if he received it where he's going to plant grain, then instead he's allowed to plant bean, the opposite of our Mishnah. Omalei v'anan Tvur lo Yisra and a Kitness. So Rovin says, doesn't it say the other way around in the Mishnah? Amalei, so Rabbi Yehuda answers him, like Kasha, Holon v'holahu. There's a difference between us in Bavel versus them in Eretz Yisrael. Meaning, first of all, we have, as Agos HaGrad pointed out, you have the difference in Dirsa between our printed Gemaras versus the Rif and the Rambam to begin with. What is the Lashon of the Mishnah? But on top of that, also, when Rabbi Yehuda, whichever way it is, in the original Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda is teaching Rovin the other way around, and Rabbi Yehuda explains to him that it actually depends between Eretz Yisrael and Babel. So Rashi explains, the Mishnah is composed in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is mountainous soil, and the top soil is very thin, so therefore you're more likely to deplete it. So therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, you have more concern about that you might deplete the soil by planting in it, beans, which take out more nutrients from the soil. Or again, according to the Rif, the other way around, planting grain, which is going to do more of that. In Bavel, though, where Rabbi Yehuda and Rovin live, Bavel is low-lying and swampy, so there's less concern about depleting the ground. So Rashi learns it means that he could change however he wants. He could choose. Instead of you planted, he was supposed to plant grain, he could plant beans. Instead of beans, he could plant grain. In other words, according to Rashi, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is that there's no deal in Bavel. You can do whatever you want because in Bavel, you have good soil over there, and therefore you have no concern of depleting it.
Obviously, Bavel was more a richer land back then.
Yeah, it is much. Yeah, nowadays Bavel is much more desert. It is much more desert-like. There are. First of all, I mean, you have Nevi'im, who said that Babel is going to be destroyed and is going to be desolate, so closer to our times. It actually came so, but it actually became so. Historically, what it is there were canals all over the place in Babel we find all over in the Gemara. When it mentions rivers, most of the time it actually means canals. We learned yesterday, for example, about the Nahar Malka Sava, for example, that got stopped up. That was actually a canal over there.
Later, Malka is a canal.
Yeah. So later on, Sava means old. So it means the river of the old king. Why they called it that, I don't know.
But there's also Nar Malkum. It's two different.
I don't know. Things. I guess it's two different ones. Let's not get too far off topic. But anyway, in medieval times, a lot of those canals were destroyed by invading armies, and that's basically what they attribute the fact that Babel is mostly desert nowadays. Anyway. Okay, so the point is, in other words,
invading armies made it.
Invading armies, yeah, Mongols and others, yeah, whatever. We're not having a history lesson over here, but yeah. All right, let's go on. So the point is, in other words, that Rabbi Huda is saying in Babel, then you have less concern about this business about doing different crops because the land over there is much richer. Actually, the Raven points out a different angle on it. On the contrary, because the land is much wetter, is much moister in Babel, on the contrary, you want to plant beans more than you plant grain because the bean helps soak up some of the extra moisture in the soil, so it's not too moist. Okay. So now that the Gemara has mentioned something that Rabbi Yehuda taught Ravin, so now the Gemara brings other things that Rabbi Yehuda taught the same Ravin by Rabbi Nachman. Omele Rabbi Yehuda le Ravin by Rabbi Nachman. Ravin Ochi, he says, my brother Ravin, not brother, in other words, biologically, but brother as in my fellow Talmud Chacham. Hani Tachli, the Beit Kitna, cress is a type of is a plant. It's an herb. You find it mentioned in various places in Shas. They used to use it in they used to use it as food. Even nowadays, sometimes you can find salad recipes that include it. Anyway, cress de bay kitna that grows in a place where flax grows. Ein behem mishum gezel. There's no issue of gezel if somebody else comes and picks that cress for themselves. There's no issue with it because, on the contrary, it ruins the flax. So therefore, the owner of the flax would prefer that those are removed from there because otherwise they take too much nutrients out of the soil and therefore they ruin the flax. Tosfos points out you have a tnai, one of the 10 tnoim that Yeshua made that we learned in Bava Kamma was that you're allowed to pick various kinds of herbs in other places, even in fields that are not yours. But there we're talking about herbs that you can use only for animals. Here we're talking about tachli. These quests, after all, is human food, and so it wouldn't be included in Yeshua's takana. But in this particular case, where they ruin the flax, then Rabbi Yehuda is pointing out you are allowed to pick them. However, if the cress is located by the border of the field, so it's not actually among the flax, yesh behem mishum gezel, then there would be an issue of gezel because then the owner is not going to want you to pick them because then it doesn't affect his flax at all. And adrabah, it's a good vegetable that he can use for himself and his family. So for you to take them would be gezel. And Rabbi Yehuda also continues, v'im hukshu lezera, if the cress has been growing there long enough, even if it is among the flax, if it's been growing long enough that now it's hard and it's producing seeds, then also even if it's planted among the flax themselves, yesh behem mishum gezel, then still gezel applies. My time, why didn't we say before that cress growing there ruins the flax? No, but my afsid, whatever it's going to damage the flax, it's already done by this time. It's so far into the growth season that it's already the stalks are already hardened and it's starting to go to seed. At that point, it's not really going to ruin the flax anymore. So if the balabas left it there all this time and nobody else has come and picked it, then at that point, you can't go to pick it because now the balabas is going to say to himself, you know what, at this point, I may as well just leave it there and I'll keep it for myself. So in short, the only way you'd be allowed to take it, Rabbi Yehuda is saying, is if it's growing among the flax, not at the edges, and it's early enough in the season that the stalks of it are still soft and it hasn't yet gone to seed. Okay. Another thing that Rabbi Yehuda tells Ravin bar Rabbi Nachman, Omelei Rabbi Yehuda le Ravin bar Rabbi Nachman, Ravin, Hani Dili, there are trees that belong to me, Diloch, and that really the fruit of them actually belongs to you. The Diloch, and there are the other way around, trees that belong to you, Dili, where the fruit belongs to me. Meaning, in other words, it actually says that the Rabbi Yehuda and Rav and Bar Rav Nachman had fields that were adjoining one another. So now what you have is we've learned earlier, and it's mentioned in various places in Shas, that between one field and the next, there wasn't always a fence, but there would usually be a berm of dirt. There would usually be like a long pile of dirt, a long skinny pile of dirt going along the edge that would mark the border between one field and the next. Sometimes trees might grow on that border. So now Rabbi Yehuda is saying sometimes you can have a tree where it's growing on that border line over there, and Rashi says we're not talking about it's grown on the borderline. Sometimes you have that the tree may be near the borderline and the roots of it extend into your property, and then the din would be even though the tree is growing on my property, but all the roots of the tree, for example, are extending into your property. Therefore the fruit of the tree would belong to you, and vice versa. You can have a case where you have a tree close to the border and all of the roots are extending to my land, and therefore the fruit would belong to me. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos disagrees and says that we're talking about that the tree is actually on the border, and the roots extend in the roots extend equally in both directions. But we're talking about where the branches extend more in one direction than the other. And there are, by the way, Rashi in addition says that what we mean is we're saying that that he's saying that sometimes what's mine, what would seem to be mine is yours, and what would seem to be yours is mine. Meaning, in other words, depending where the roots are according to Rashi, or the branches according to Tosfos, there are actually there are Rishonim also who say that he doesn't mean necessarily, he doesn't mean actually that let me continue with the next line of the Gemara, and then I'll explain. The Nohug Bnei Metzra, people who have adjoining fields like that, have the Minhag, Ilan, Anoita Lakan, Lakan, Vanoita Lakan, Lakan, that a tree, where it extends in one direction, then it belongs to this one, and where it extends in the other direction, it belongs to the other one. Meaning, Rashi says, sort of Yehuda is saying that, you know, the reason why am I saying that sometimes you have a tree in my property, and really the fruit belongs to you, and vice versa, is because people who live on border lines over there often have that minhag, that's how we do it. We look at which direction the roots are going, point of Rashi, or where the roots are going in equal directions, and the branches lean more in one direction than the other, point of Tosfos, then they have the minhag to divide it that way. Meaning, in other words, the Rosh explains that Rabbi Yehuda is saying, myself and you, we wouldn't mind, we wouldn't be machbid on one another. He brings from Rabbeinu Mesholem. We wouldn't be machbid on one another. But the minhag, you should know that the minhag of other people who have adjoining fields like that is they are machbid, and then you should know these didn't apply. De Itmar, as in fact we have a discussion. Ilan ho'imad ala metza, when you have a tree that is standing on the border. So according to Rashi, we could be talking about even if it's not exactly on the border, just close to it, but the roots go all in one direction. Versus according to Tosfos, we're talking about strictly that we're talking about it's located on the borderline itself. Anyway, Omer Rav Hanoita Lakan Lakan Vanoita Lakan Lakan. So Rav says, like we just said, that whatever inclines in each direction goes to the owner of that field. Or Shmuel Amachokin, Shmuel says, no, you divide the fruit 50-50. So the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction against Rav. A brisa says, Ilan ha'omer ala meitzer, when you have a tree located on the borderline, yachloiku, then the two landowners divide the fruit, tiyuv to the Rav. So wouldn't that brisa be a contradiction on Rav? The answer is, tirgum ha'shmuel, alib the Rav. Shmuel explains, in order to fa'enfer, according to Rav, that b'malik ala meitzer kuloi, we're talking about, the brisa is talking about where the tree fills up the entire borderline. So there we're talking about, so again, according to Rashi, we were talking about until now, that the roots are not going evenly in both directions. The roots are going more in the direction of one of the other person's field. So then Rav would say that since the roots incline in the direction of the other person's field, then he gets the Paris. Shmuel is saying Yachloiku, no matter what. The Braisa talking about Yachloiku is where the is where the roots are going equally in both directions. Tosfos, who holds that to begin with, the Gemara was talking about all along, where the roots are going equally in both directions, then Tosfos says, Rav would say, since the roots are going equally in all directions, then you go according to the foliage, you go according to the branches and fruits of the tree, and you go according to that, whatever is across the borderline, if you measure like that, then goes to the other guy. And Shmuel would say that Chokin, that you have to look more at the roots. And since the roots are going equally in both directions, then they have to split it 50-50.
But this, when it's on the borderline therefore would be large.
Right. So that's what I was saying before. That's what I was saying before. The borderline, we're not just talking about a line, and we're not just talking about a line in the dirt. We're talking about there's a whole berm of earth over there. There's a whole mm-hmm. pile of dirt that runs the length of the border that would mark the borderline between one field and the next. For that reason, we had previously in the Gemara, we had over Yom Tov, for example, the case where there was a shidufin, where there was a blast that affected the field, but not telem echad, not one furrow along the entire field. Later on, the Gemara is going to mention other dinim that apply to the border, because the border is a wide thing. It's possible to talk about it as an independent entity of its own. Yeah. Okay. So again, Shmuel explains that in order that the Braisa is talking about a case where yes, you would where you would divide, where even Rav would agree that you divide it, but when you don't have those conditions. So again, according to Rashi, the key thing is which direction are the roots going. If the roots are going more in one direction than the other, then Rav would say that it goes to the person whose field that the roots are growing into, which is also what Rabbi Yehuda had said. Meanwhile, Shmuel would say you divide it 50-50 regardless. And according to Tosfos, the vote is we're talking to begin with where the roots are extending in the same in all directions equally, and we're talking about the branches lean more to one way toward versus the other. So Rav would say you go according to the branches, and Shmuel would say you go according to the according to the roots. Well, the Gemara says Yehochi Maila Memra. If you're telling me, Shmuel, that the Braisa is talking about where the tree is complete, where the roots of the tree are going equally in both directions, then what's the chiddush? And the answer is Loit Sricha. The chiddush is the Braisa would have to tell us the Toli Tuner Lachad Gisa, that the burden of the tree, meaning the branches and the branches, or according to Tosfos, just the fruit, are extending more in one direction. According to Rashi, we're talking about that the branches are leaning more in one direction. According to Tosfos, we're talking about the branches are more or less even, but the fruit is growing more on one side than the other side. So the Gemara says, "Vakati Maila Memra." Still, what's the chiddush? Why would we think why would we think otherwise than Yachloku? And the answer is Maudetema to Amalek Ploig Hochi. You would think the owner of the field where most of the fruit is hanging over it can say Ploig Hochi. Let's divide it like that. Let's divide along the length of the border between us, and then I come out with more of the fruit, or maybe even all of it. Kamash Malon. Therefore, the Braisa is telling us no. To Amalek, in a case like this, the other one can tell him my fuzz is to Pagus Hochi. What makes you think we should divide according to the edge of the field? Ploig Hochi, instead, let's divide it right angles to that, and then each one of us comes out with half the fruit. And that's a valid claim, and therefore each one of them is, in fact, entitled to half the fruit.
And this is so long as it's growing on
the border. So it's growing on the border, and again, according to Rashi, that the branches are extending in all directions equally, and according to Tosfos, that the roots, according to Rashi, are extending right. In all directions evenly, and according to Tosfos, that the branches are extending in all directions equally.
Okay.
Fine. Another thing, speaking more of things that Rabbi Yehuda taught Ravin Barav Nachman, Amalei Rabbi Yehuda le Ravin Barav Nachman, Ravin Ochi, like Tizben Ara Dismicha Lamasa. Don't buy land that's close to the city. That you're gonna don't buy land, don't buy agricultural land close to the city. Also, a person is not allowed to stand next to somebody else's field, when it has its standing grain in it, when the crops are ripening in it. The problem is that then you're going to give him an ayin hara. So now if the field is very close to the city, that you're going to have people are going to be able to do that, and then the result is your fields are going to be affected by an ayin hara, and therefore it's better for them to be further away from the city where nobody passes by anything. Interestingly, the Rambam does not bring this as halacha, and the Rambam actually writes. He had a regular exchange of letters with the Chachmei Luno, with the Chacham of Luno in southern France. They had gotten early copies of the Rambam Sefer, and they wrote back and forth to him all the time with questions and discussion in halacha, various things. So one time they asked him about this and certain related topics that are talked about at the beginning of Bava Basra in terms of what you need as far as a fence around a garden versus a chotzer, whatever. Anyway, the Rambam explains that no, when it says over here also, it doesn't mean actually also. It means that it's a midas chassidus not to do that. But not to the extent that Rambam explains over there, not to the extent where, for example, if you have two people with adjoining fields, that they should be required to put up a fence between one and the other to avoid ayin hara. No, it's just also means that you should, it's not the derech eretz thing to do, but it's not actually also. That said, though, most of the Rishonim disagree with him. The Ravid right there in Hilchos Shechenim disagrees with the Rambam, so do many other Rishonim, and it
so
is in fact brought.
They believe that ayin hara is the reason why.
Is the reason why, and therefore, so it's not just, yeah, and that means not just midas chassidus, but it's actually a requirement in halacha, and so it's actually brought in halacha this concept that if a person wants, that if a person says, I need you, we need to put up a fence between our fields to avoid ayin hara, then that's a valid claim, and the other one has to share in certain cases, at least, the other one has to share in the expenses of building such a fence.
Oh, that's fascinating. Is there a modern equivalent to with modern business where you should be careful with ayin hara?
That I don't know, but could be.
Okay.
The reason why ayin hara works is a whole question in itself. I mean, b'chlal, we find the whole of Shas, and we're going to have soon some discussion about this. One interesting explanation is that when a person is successful and other people see his success and it makes them jealous. Now they ought to not be jealous, but nevertheless, right, it causes a certain kitrug in Shemayim. Well, listen, do you deserve that because of your success, another yid should feel bad, and therefore that makes that causes the person to be reviewed in Shemayim and see, does he taka deserve that?
You don't want to show up,
basically. Yeah. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is saying it's better not to have your field too close to the city to avoid that issue. So the Gemara says, Eini, is that so? On the contrary, having your field near the city seems to be a good thing. Rab Abba one time met up with the Talmidim of Rav, and Omalahu, he found them, he met up with them. Omalahu, when he asked them, "My Omar Rab Bahani Kroy, what did Rab say to explain the following psukim that we have in the Brochas in Parshas Kisavai? Baruch Ata, we say them also in V'yitmucha, Baruch Ata Ba'ir, Baruch Ata Basadi, you should be blessed in the city, and blessed in the field, and baruch atah b'vayecho, baruch atah b'tisecha, you will be blessed when you go in and when you come out. So what did Rab explain? What are these things? Marashah explains the point of the question is, since the following psukim say, we also say them in V'yitmacha, Yitzav Hashem Itcha Esabrocha Basamecha Ovachir Mishlach Yidecha, so automatically that includes the city and the field and going in and going out. So therefore, what did Rav explain that these psukim specifically are referring to? So he asked them, they answered him, Hochi Omer Rav. Rav explained like this. Baruch Ata Ba'ir, when it says you should be blessed in the city, means Shiyehe Beis HaSamuch LeBeis HaKnesses. Your house should be near the shul, and that way it's easier for you to get to shul and to be one of the first 10 people for the minyan. Baruch Ata Basadeh, you're blessed in the field, means Shiyu Nechasecha Krevim La'ir, that your property should be close to the city. So we see it's good for it to be close to the city, the opposite of what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. But let's finish off Rav's Drasha. Baruch Ata B'vayecha, when the pasuk says you're blessed and you're coming in, that means Shalei Timtza Ishtecha Sofik Nida B'Shas B'Yoschem in Adera. You won't find your wife Sofik Nida when you come home from a trip. Now Rashi says Sofik Nida, and how much more so Vaday Nida. The point is she'll be Toher, and that way you'll right away be able to have relations. Elsewhere in Masech to Sanhedrin, where it also brings this Gemara, Rashi says over there, and Yesh Oimrim, that the Rashi over there is not actually from Rashi, but anyway, Rashi over there gives a different explanation. On the contrary, it means Davka, she won't be Suffolk Nida. Marshal says similarly over here, and other Mephoshim say, when she's Vade Nida, you say to yourself, okay, look, she's Vade Nida, she's off limits. Suffolk, that's, the Suffolk, you start second guessing yourself, but is it really a Suffolk? Maybe there's some kind of heter, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, Suffolk in a way is worse than Vade. Anyway, so that's the Baruch Ata B'Vayecha, and Baruch Ata B'Tzeisecha, when it says you're blessed and you're going out, that means Shiyu Tzetzoi Me'echa Kamoscha, means that your descendants, that your children and your descendants should be like you, should be of your caliber. So we see that Baruch Atah Basada means you want an Chasech of Kroivim later. In fact, we have in the bracha that it's brought in Gemara Brachas, the bracha that a guest says for the Balabayas, which you can find it in Shulchan Aruch, and you find it sometimes in some Siddurim, although it doesn't seem to be a widespread meaning to say it. You also have that the part of the bracha is that his Nechosim should be Kroivim later. So anyway, so how does that fit with what Rabbi Yehuda said? And the Gemara, by the way, interjects, before we get to the answer of what Rabbi Yehuda meant, Rabbi Yochanan, like Omar Hachi, now Rabbi Yochanan does not learn the psukim like that. Ella, rather, he darshins as follows. Baruch atah b'ir means sheyehe beis hakiseh samoch l'shulchanka. You should have a bathroom, you should have a place to go and relieve yourself close to your table, meaning close to your house. The point being, in other words, you shouldn't have to go far out in the field for that purpose. Rashi explains the reason why it mentions the table specifically is because you're supposed to try to see whether you need to go to the bathroom before and after eating. It's best for your health that way. Meaning, in other words, Aval Besak Nesses Loi. Rabbi Yehuda learns that on the contrary, to have a shul close to your house is not such a good thing. Rabbi Yochanan L'taimei, because Rabbi Yochanan is going according to his own svara, Domus Scharpsius Yesh. He says the scharpsius over Svira just now. We had people were learning Masechta Sota, as is the minhag, and you have in Sota over there where Rabbi Yochanan points out that we learned from an almana who used to go a far distance to shul, and Rabbi Yochanan asks, so why? You don't have a local shul? And she says scharpsius, and yeah, we learn from that there is a greatness of scharpsius of taking more steps to shul. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan, adraba, it's not such a good thing to have the shul closer to your house, then you lose out on scharpsius.
And that is daf chaf beis.
That's a nachaf beis in Sota, yeah.
I looked it up.
Now, does Rab disagree with that? The Teres Chaim points out, on the other hand, you want to have the advantage of being one of the first 10 for the minyan. So therefore, if you live close to the shul, Rab says, fine, you're not getting scharpsius, but on the other hand, you're more easily able to make it as one of the first 10 to shul, and therefore that overrides the issue of scharpsius. Marsha points out, by the way, that all of these things, a shul and lahavdil, a bathroom, are usually both located outside the city. Therefore, that's why we're saying there's an advantage to have them, instead of being far outside the city as they are for most people, for one or the other of them to be closer to you. So therefore, Rav might say, sure, when you're in the city itself, then you get scharpsius by walking to a faraway shul. But if you're walking, if the shul is out of town, is outside the town, and you have to, and it's a danger to walk there, then you're better off living closer to it. You have less scharpsius, but you also have less sakom. So Rabbi Yochanan is saying that you don't want the shul necessarily to be so close to your house. It's better for it to be further away because scharpsius. Then Rabbi Yochanan continues, Baruch Atah Basada, when the pasuk continues, blessed are you in your field. That means, so Rav had said that it means that your nechosim should be close to the city. Rabbi Yochanan is saying, rather, it means they should be diversified. Shiyu nechosecha mishuloshin. You should have all three kinds of nechosim. Shlish betvua, one third of your land is being used to grow grain. Shlish bezesim, one third olives, or shlish begfanim, and one third grapes. The point is, Rashi says, no matter what, even if you have some kind of disease or something like that hits one of those crops, the other two are likely to, or even if you have it affects two of them, you still have the third one. You have different kinds of things to affect different kinds of crops, and therefore you're likely to still come out with something intact. Even if there's a bad year. So that's the advantage of them being diversified. Marsha gives a different point that these are the three basic necessities of a person. And we see from the fact that all three of them have a unique bracha of their own. For grain, you have mezonos and hamotzi. For wine, you have a goffin. For oil, the Gemara tells us in brachas, in principle, you say bar priya eitz on it, unlike all other fruit juices, except that in practice, there's only some rare cases where you would say a bracha on it because you usually don't drink oil by itself. The point is, these are all the basic necessities of a person, and therefore it's best that a person has all three of them. That way he doesn't have to rely on others for those things. He can get them out of his own land. Anyway, Rabbi Yochanan says that's the baruch atah basada. And when he continues, Baruch Atah B'Vayecha, Baruch Atah B'Tzeisecha. So Rabbi said, B'Vayecha means that you don't come home and find your wife Safek Nida. And when and betzei secha means that you should have descendants of your caliber. Rabbi Yochanan learns differently, means shetei yitzioschem in ha'olam could be oschal olam. You going out of the world should be like the way you are when you come into the world. Ma, the point of it, the point is, in other words, why is it putting bayecha first? On the face of it, you leave your house before you come back. So it should say baruch atah betzei secha or baruch atah b'vayecha. So therefore, we're understanding that it means not when you leave your house, but rather when you come into the world and when you leave the world. Ma bi'oscha la'olam b'leichet. Just like you come into the world without sin, because only the goyim have their notion of original sin and all that nonsense. But we say, a person comes into the world without averes. Af yitziyaskum in ha'olam b'leichet. The same way when you leave the world should be without chet. The point is, in other words, that Rav is saying again that you shouldn't have that you should have your land close to the city. He's not worried about the Ayin Hara issue. So why is Rav Yehuda? So how can Rav Yehuda say the opposite and say that you shouldn't? And the answer is Loikasha, Hoda Mahadala Shuravaritka. There's no contradiction between what Rav himself is saying. So the point is, when Rav Yehuda had said that we had said Rabbi Yehuda had said don't buy land near the city, and the Gemara had brought that Omar Abba, Omar Avuna, Omar Rav, that you're not allowed to stand by somebody else's field when the crops are growing. And here Rav himself is saying it's good to have your nechassim close to the city. So the answer is like Kasha, it's not a contradiction. It depends whether this field is surrounded by a wall and a fence. It actually explains shura means a wall, ritka means a hedge of branches that are branches or boards or whatever that are on top of it. Versus where you don't have that, where you have it surrounded by that, that's a very good thing to have it near the city. It's much more convenient to bring home the crops. And Ayin Hara won't be an issue because it's surrounded by a wall and nobody's going to be able to peek in. As opposed to you don't have that, then you're better off having it further away because of the Ayin Hara. So the Gemara brings further on this topic of Ayin Hara. The Pasuk says, V'heser Hashem mimcho kol choli. Hashem will remove from you every sickness. Now, kol choli suggests, it actually explains something, it means, not, we don't mean all the individual sicknesses, one particular thing that many different sicknesses depend on. So what is that? So now we're going to have several different opinions, what that one thing is that many different sicknesses are a result of it. Omer Rav zu ayin. So Rav says it refers to the bad effect of ayin hara. And the Gemara explains, Rav the Taimei. Rav is going according to his svara in saying that. The Rav solik lebei kivri. It happened once that Rav went to a cemetery. Ovad mai de ovad. He did whatever he did, which there are several explanations like that. Rashi explains he knew how to whisper things over the graves, where therefore he could find out each grave, he could find out what was the cause of death of the person who passed away and is buried over there. Rabbeinu Hananel explained, there's several other explanations. Rabbeinu Hananel says that he did like a shailas cholim. He asked in a dream and he was told min hashamayim. The Oruch has an even more interesting explanation that he planted trees over the graves and he beswore the trees that they're not going to flower unless the person died in his time, not prematurely for some reason. And out of the 100 trees, only one of them flowered. So anyway, Omar, so now he concluded, Tishin v'tisha ba'ayin ra, 99 out of 100 people who passed away and are buried in this cemetery died of ayin ra, v'echa b'derech eretz. Only one out of 100 dies naturally without having been affected by ayin hara.
So someone who dies unnaturally, it's ayin hara.
That's what I was saying, that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this guy died because he got hit by a truck, but that's Ayin Hara.
But that's Ayin Hara. Rav is attributing all of it to Ayin Hara.
Wow.
Tosfos actually points out an interesting point. What about the Gemara mentions in a few places that Bnei Yosef are immune to Ayin Hara? This was also in Sota, that because Yosef controlled his eyes in the whole matter with Potiphar's wife, therefore his descendants are immune to Ayin Hara. Well, then we should find that descendants of Yosef live much longer than normal. So Tosfos says, fine, but what happens is they die b'derech eretz at a higher rate than normal. So in other words, yeah, like you're saying, being passing away of other causes, it's true, it's not Ayin Hara, but Hashem arranges, after all, a person has their time that they're destined to live. So Hashem arranges that they get affected by other things.
I was also thinking, wouldn't that be a greater percentage than 1%?
Ah, so Marshall points that out. He says, well, very well, where did Rav go to the cemetery? You know, it's in Bavel. The Bnei Yosef are among the Aseres HaShvatim. They weren't taken into Galus and Babel. They were taken to other places by Sancheirav 100-odd years before the Churban Bayis Rishon. Therefore, very few of them were in Babel, and therefore he can well say that that only 1% of them passed away from causes other than Ayin Hara. That 1% may well include a higher percentage of Bnei Yosef, but the point is, in other words, that yeah, if Rav had lived in a place where there were a higher percentage of Bnei Yosef, then yeah, he wouldn't be able to say that. Okay, anyway, that's
what
the point.
What is exactly Ayin Hara? What do you mean by Ayin Hara?
So what do we mean by Ayin Hara? So like we said, a person looks at somebody else and he's a little bit jealous, so he feels a little bit bad. That guy has such and such good fortune, and I do not. So the Gemara is saying over here and in other places, that can have a negative effect. Whether because, again, it can mean because the person then is judged and the based in Shamayla, well, do you really deserve to have such good fortune that it's making a fellow Yid feel bad? That it's like, it's true, the other guy ought not to act like that. He ought not to be jealous like that. But nevertheless, it still causes a kitrug in Shamayim. And there are various other explanations what exactly the fact is. A person's sight, it has a very great power. We find by tzaddikim in various places in the Gemara. We know that they could make a person gal shalat samas, turn him into a pile of bones. The average person doesn't have such an effect with their eyes, but nevertheless, they have a certain degree of effect by looking at something.
Yeah, it's also interesting that most people who are jealous don't realize that there's really nothing to be jealous of.
This is also true, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so this is according to Rav.
But how can you say that when you look at someone, it may affect him when actually maybe he has a lot of mitzvahs or he has a lot
that
of...
That may well be. The fact is that still, so you have, for example, again, we're saying that Bnei Yosef in the schus of what their ancestor did, because of that, they're immune to Ayin Hara. You have certain other things. The Gemara elsewhere mentions there are things that a person can do to make themselves less susceptible to Ayin Hara. So yeah, there is all a valid point. Nonetheless, though, the fact is that we do find all over Shas that Ayin Hara does have a certain effect. What the mechanism is for that effect, like I say, you have different proportion, but the fact is the Gemara takes that as for granted that it does exist. That it does exist, and therefore that it can have an effect on a person. Again, one idea being that because it's causing the other person to be jealous, and therefore, and we have halachas that depend on that. The concept that we have in Shul, for example, that you don't call a father and son for successive aliyahs or two brothers successively, is based on the idea of Ayin Hara. The fact that especially back in the day when everybody laid their own section of the Torah, then there was a concern. You know, people are going to get jealous of. Look at that. You have two people from the same family that know enough to be able to do that. So the fact remains. It's true. There are some poskim who talk about maybe we don't have to worry so much about it nowadays. There's a Tshuva of Rav Moshe, for example, who says on it that it may be one of those things that the Gemara says mandalay kopid. If a person is not makbid on it, loy kapdin and mahadei, then we're not so makbid with him min hashamayim. So maybe therefore Ayin Hara has less of an effect than it used to. Nevertheless, though, the fact is you still have halachas even that depend on it. Anyway, so that was Rav's opinion.
Who says about Mandel Al-Hakpid?
So the Gemara mentions that point elsewhere in connection with the Zugas. Rav Moshe applies that to this matter of Ayin Hara. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Now again, so we said again when we say kol choyli, we're talking about one thing which is the cause of many different sicknesses. So Rav had said that means Ayin Hara. Ushmul Amar Shmuel says it's a different thing. Zehod Ruach. It refers to the effects of wind, of air on a person. So the Gemara says Shmuel Taimet. Shmuel in that is going according to his own Svara. Shmuel says just that. All the various diseases and problems and things, all the things that are all the various causes of death can all be attributed to the wind. Meaning, in other words, it actually says sometimes you have a certain person where a particular wind is bad for a particular wind or at a particular time is bad for it. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean? How can Shmuel say that all causes of death are because of that? What about? You have people who are executed by the government, whose head is chopped off. they die from the loss of their head, not from the wind. So the Gemara says, Hanachnami, you know what? Them also, Ilav Zika, if it weren't for the fact for the air, that gets into the wound and then makes it worse, Abdullah Husama, they would be able to prepare for them a type of medicine. Elsewhere, the Gemara calls it samtari, which has the ability to knit together cut flesh, v'chaye, and they would actually be able to reattach the head to the body, and the person would be able to live. Only because the wind gets there and causes, therefore, and causes the wound to get exacerbated, then therefore the person dies from it. If it weren't for that, in principle, you would be able to use samtari to reattach the head to the body. Now, in other places, the Gemara mentions that somebody had actually earlier in the Masechta, they would do operations in a base of the Shisha. When they needed to do an operation, they would do it in a marble building, because that's basically airtight. Nevertheless, the fact is, Talmud Rabbeinu Peretz points out that the fact is there's still a little bit of Zika, there's still a little bit of air gets in. It's not absolutely airtight after all. The surgeons are breathing after all. So therefore, so Shmuel is saying that kind of thing affects it.
And their masks are made in China.
Yeah, whatever. So anyway, so Shmuel is saying that the wind is always what affects. There is actually an implication of that in halacha. There's an interesting halacha in the Rambam in Hilchos Ritzeach that says that if a person kills somebody else, then we don't always, if he shechts him, he's not always going to be chayev to go to Ori Mikla, because it might be that the person himself, the victim, actually thrashed around or whatever, and therefore caused himself to die sooner than he did to die, where otherwise he might have been able to survive the attack. So the Rambam tells on himself in Tshuva that one of the Dayanim in Alexandria asked him, where's the source of that halacha? And eventually, to make a long story short, the Rambam remembered that this is one of those out of place halachas. You find this halacha in Yevamos and in Gittin. You don't find it in Sanhedrin or Marcus, where you would expect to find such dinim. But anyway, the Rambam goes on to say in the halacha that if the attack took place, for example, in a base of the Shisha, in a marble house, then yes, we can make the Ritzeach run away to the Ore Mikla, because then we can say that it's a, then we can say, based on what we're saying over here, there's little enough air coming in that it would have affected him. But otherwise, we have strong reason to think that it wasn't the attack exclusively that killed the guy.
Now, the Ritzeach might want to run to the Ore Mikla.
Maybe, but there was a question of whether he's allowed to. We'll learn about that in Masechta Makos. Mm-hmm. Okay, onward. So far we have Rav is saying Ein Hara, Shmuel is saying the wind. Rav Chanina gives a third opinion that is Zut Sina. Rav Chanina says the choli refers to cold. The Amar Rav Chanina, Kol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Mitzinim Pachen. Everything is in the hands of Hashem. Meaning, Tosfos says, we don't mean as far as Midas. There we say Kol Bidei Shemayim Chutz Midas Shemayim. We mean everything is in Hashem's hands as far as what happens to a person, except for Tzinim Pachim. Tzinim means cold. Pachim, Rashi says, means blowing. So it's not the same as Shmuel's wind, because Shmuel is talking about wind or air, even when there's no cold. Rav Chanina is saying specifically when there's cold. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Tzinim Pachim Bederach Ikesh, cold and blowing cold, is in the way of the crooked, meaning a person is responsible to stay out of such things. Shema Nafshi Yuchat Mehem, a person who watches his own soul will stay away from such things. Elsewhere, Tosfos explains actually that sinim pachim means not just cold, it means heat as well. Here the Gemara seems to be saying that means specifically, well, so the Gemara is saying that sinah, but elsewhere, Tosfos points out, the Gemara elsewhere implies that sinim pachim means cold and heat. So therefore, sinim would mean cold and pachim would mean heat. Elsewhere also, Tosfos explains what it means is...
Would mean heat and not wind.
Right. So Tosfos elsewhere explains, in other words, that what it means is, so now we're saying Hashem will protect you from that, meaning you're going to be responsible to stay away from it as much as possible. But nevertheless, in other words, Hashem will make it that you won't have that problem in the first place. Hashem will give you, it can include, Tosfos explains elsewhere, that Hashem will give you the das to dress properly and the ability to dress properly. And it means that Hashem, it can also mean that Hashem will make it that there won't be such extremes of weather in the first place. Interesting little story in connection with that, by the way. There was the famous Goyen, Rabbi Chezkel Abramsky. He was a Rav in Russia in the years before the revolution, and then afterward as well. He worked closely together with the Friedrich Rebbe on Yiddishkeit in Russia at that time in the 1920s. Eventually, he was arrested and sent to Siberia.
Right.
They didn't give him any proper clothing, just like they didn't to any of the prisoners over there. So Rabbi Chezkel says that he davens to the Eibishter. He says, "Listen, you have this Gemara over here that a person is responsible to stay away from extremes of heat and cold, and if he gets sick because of that, it's his own fault. But here, where they're not giving me proper clothing, then it reverts to you, Hashem. It's just like everything else. That's Bidei Shemayim. It's your responsibility, Hashem, to protect me from the cold here in Siberia." And sure enough, during the 3 years over there, he never once so much as once caught a cold. People were dying right and left over there. He survived the whole thing without even ever catching a cold during the 3 years that he was there. And eventually the Russians released him and he was able to move to, he actually moved to London and he became a distinguished Dian over there. Yeah.
Also, they say in the Holocaust, there was really insufficient clothing and so many people survived than...
Yeah,
than,
yeah. So it's the same similar kind of thing.
People were complaining about this and that, and then... Right. They were only able to sleep with one blanket among six people in a tire.
Yeah. All right, onward. So the Gemara continues. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina amar zut soya. Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina says the choli, the kol choli that we said before, refers to the wastes of the body. The amar mat soya sachoitim, but soya sa'ozen. The waste from the nose, what do you call it? Mucus from the nose, with soya sa'ozen and earwax, ruban kosher, a lot of it is not good for your body. A little bit of it is good for you. So therefore, so when a person has too much, when a person has too much mucus in his nose and too much earwax in his ears, then it can cause him to become sick. So therefore, Rabbi Yosef Reb Chanina is saying that's what the pasuk is saying, that Hashem will protect you from the effects of that. Rabbi Loza Omezu Mora. Rabbi Loza says a fifth thing that choli refers to the mora, refers to the gall, the gall is a bile is produced by the liver, and the overflow of it is stored in the gallbladder. When a person has too much of it, then it affects the rest of his body and it makes him sick. Tanya Namihachi, we learn in fact similarly in a Braisa, Machlo Zumara, when you have a different pasuk where Hashem promises that'll take away Vasiresi Machlo Mikibecha, the word Machlo refers to the Mara, refers to the bile when there's too much of it in the body. Machlo, why is it called Machlo? Because it makes a person's entire body sick. Davar Acha, Machla, another reason it's called Machla, there are 83 different sicknesses and diseases that depend on the Mara. Machla is Gematria 83. The Kulan and all of them, Pas Shachris B'melach, eating bread in the morning with salt, the Kitten Shamayim, and drinking a jug of water, Mevataltan, is Mevatal them. It takes away the effects of them. So therefore, in other words, as the Gemara is going to go on to say, a person should be eating Pas Shachris. There's a lot of interesting things in this. First of all, so let's see. Marsha points out that first of all, Rashi says when we say kitin shomayim, better really would be to drink wine. But if a person doesn't have wine, then instead he drinks it. Instead, he has together with his breakfast, together with his pas shachris, he has water. Marsha says maybe not, actually, maybe fakert. It means davka water, because that helps keep a person's mind clear. And the point is, bread, in other words, is the ideal food for a person's seichel, as we find in other places in Shas, and water is the best drink for a person's seichel. Other kinds of foods and other kinds of drinks, on the contrary, may confuse a seichel. The Tzemach Tzedek actually comments on this in one place in his Sfarim, or maybe more than one place, whatever. He says, on the contrary, actually, Marsha maybe had forgotten the Gemara in Erevin that says that here in this pasuk, when it says, Hashem will bless your bread and your water, and I'll remove machla from among you. There's a Gemara in Erevin that says that water there actually refers to wine. And we learn from that that a house where wine is poured out like water is a house where there's bracha. So on the contrary, then it should be wine. And like Rashi is saying, it's only water if you don't have wine. Deeper things behind it. First of all, the Rebbe pointed out in a sicha once that in connection with Rambam, the Rambam has 83 halachas, which corresponds to what we're saying over here, the 83 kind of illnesses. So we mean, in other words, that learning Rambam it helps a person against these various kinds of gashmiyistika and ruchmiyistika illnesses.
Oh,
the Rebbe says that in a sicha in Tavshin Mem Vav, a couple of years after he had started the Takana of Rambam. The Tzemach Tzedek, meanwhile, points out in a number of places in his Maimorim that the deeper meaning behind this, the mora, he says, represents klipas noiga, which can have a negative effect on a person because a person gets too enmeshed in things of klipas. So what happens? How do you counteract that? Pas refers to Torah. Shachris means learning it in the morning. Bamelach means that you learn it together with Torah Sachsidus. And the Kitten Shomayim refers that you're learning Torah Shabal Peh. So that combination of learning Torah in the morning and learning Nigla and learning Chassidus helps take away the bad effect of Mora of Klipas Noga on a person. So the Gemara continues. There are 13 things that the Chachamim said about eating bread in the morning, that it has a good effect on a person. An interesting point, by the way, in this connection, the Bach on Shulchan Aruch, this halacha is brought in the tour in Simon Kuf Nun Hei. The Bach actually brings from earlier Mefarshim, I think primarily from the Mordechai, who says that the bread actually would have to have certain very, very specific conditions on it for it to have the good effect of Pas Shachris. And he gives a whole list of conditions, in which case it's very rare to find bread that actually fits all those conditions. He says over here that it would have to be that. So what does he say? For example, he mentions that he brings that we in our Rebbeim are not used to usually eating past chocolates because we heard the grain has to come from far away from civilization and there were no roosters around there and there were no people pulling boats over there, so it's uncommon to find that. Other achronim after that say that where did the Bach get that from? There's a different Gemara that mentions such a thing about a certain kind of plant that you use against certain kinds of sickness and witchcraft or whatever. So maybe he's generalizing from that. So it's not about pas shachris. So the Gemara mentions over there that it makes pusa is not going to work. So apparently the Mordechai and the Bach learn that pusa means pas shachris, but the Magen Avraham disagrees and says that no, it's referring to a particular plant that it mentions over there in Masechta Shabbos. Anyway, so most of the poskim bring generically that you should eat past Shacharis. And the Alter Rebbe also mentions it in his Shulchan Aruch. You should be going right after davening. You should be going to learn Torah. But if in between you go and have past Shacharis, then that's also fine because it helps strengthen you to learn Torah better. Anyway, so Yud Gimel Dvarim never past Shacharis. Matzelis Menachama, it saves a person from the bad effects of heat. I mean, not Sina, and the bad effects of cold. Because now that he ate well, then as the Gemara is going to go on to say, it protects him from those things. Ominas zikin, it protects him from the bad effect of wind, which we said before. Shmuel says wind can make a person sick, and now it protects him from that. Ominah mazikin, it also protects him from shadim. Omachkimas pesi, it makes the foolish wise, because now when he eats, then he's able to think more clearly. And he's able to win his cases in Beis Din, because if he has a case in Beis Din, if he didn't eat, then his mind is all mixed up, and he can't present his arguments well in Beis Din. Like this, when he's calmer, then he's more able to present his arguments successfully. By the way, I think Rabbi Yaakov Emden points out, so what about if the other guy also ate breakfast? And the answer is fine, but still the ha'emes yoda darke, ultimately the truth will come out, and therefore, no matter what, it'll work for him. Lumad Torah, he also is able to be zoicha to learn Torah properly, or the lamed and to teach, or dvarav nishmoin, people will listen to what he has to say, because again, he's able to explain it more clearly. The Talmudim skayim b'yodei, his learning stays with him, because he's able to learn calmly, and therefore he's able to absorb and remember his learning. The ein b'sore malahevel, his skin does not produce foul odors, because like this, in other words, when a person eats, sometimes Maharsha points out, sometimes you have certain kinds of foods. A person eats them and they cause him to have body odor. So like this, when he eats past shachris, b'melach, and so forth, then that helps against that. If he's the kind of person who's subject to hurim, he starts being maharher in things of znus. Then, as a result of eating breakfast, he's in a better mood. So now he's able to have relations with his wife. And then he goes out to the street and he sees other women, then he's not so attracted to them, right? because he already satisfied himself with his wife. And the 13th thing, Vahuregas Kinim of Neme Ayim, and it kills the bugs or the worms or whatever that live in the stomach. The Yesh Omim, some say there's a 14th thing, Af Moitzia Sakina or Machnes Asa'aba, it takes out jealousy and brings in love, because again, now that a person is feeling calmer, then he gets along better with other people.
First of all, it was not the same kind of wheat we have, because we have hybridized wheat.
That may be, I don't know.
And it was. a whole wheat mostly that they ate
I
cooked in
guess.
those ovens where it
Could
was
be.
like slapped on the side of
Yeah,
it.
it could be there are
So it's
differences. Yeah.
completely different than what we're
It's possible. And again,
getting.
the Bach is saying that it has certain particular criteria for it to be called Pastrachos, although again, the
Right.
Magen Avraham and most other
We
Achronim
refine
disagree.
non-hybridized wheat and what they
All
ate.
right, let's let's go on.
Ooh.
Okay. Omale Rabba la Rabba Bamori. So in this connection, Rabba asked Rabba Bamori, Menoha Milsa Damri Inchi, where do we get this expression? We learned this in Bava Kamma as well. They have this expression that people say, Shtitin Rehiti Rohu, 60 runners ran. Why 60? Tosfos says one way is because we learned before, we learned over Yom Tov that there were six seasons in the year, each one consisting of about 60 days. So here we're talking about the heat and the cold. So therefore, 60 days
That's
of heat and
fascinating.
60 days of cold. But Tosfos says maybe not. 60 is often an indefinite, large number that the Gemara uses. Anyway, 60 runners ran. They still couldn't catch up to a person who ate bread in the morning.
Yeah.
So he outruns all of them. And also the Omer Rabbanan, and the expression that the Chachamim say, Hashkem ve'echol, you should always wake up early and eat. But kayetz mipnei chama, in the summertime that will help you against the effects of the heat. Over chorif mipnei tzina, and in the wintertime it'll help you against the effects of the cold. Where do we have a pasuk that expresses this whole point? Omale, so Rava Bar Mori, who we find in the Gemara in Bava Kamma, was an expert in Psukim, answered him with a pasuk from Yeshaya. Dichtiv, the pasuk says, Lo yu ovo v'lo yitzmo, in the context of talking about the Jews who are returning from Golos, but he's explaining more generally, Lo yu ovo v'lo yitzmo, they won't be hungry and thirsty, v'lo yakim shorav v'shemesh, and the heat and the sun will not strike them, meaning lo yakim shorav v'shemesh. Why will the heat or the sun, meaning that the sun can be in the wintertime, where that may, like you have sometimes in the wintertime, you have a sunny day. It's a particularly cold day, so it's not going to affect you. Why lo yakim shorav v'shemesh, even though you're over v'lo yitzmo, because they're not going to be hungry or thirsty. So we see that one leads to the other. Omale, so Rabbi tells him, At Amrit Limahosam, you know what you're telling me from a Pasuk in Nevi'im, from Yeshaya, actually, I can find you a Pasuk in Torah that we can learn this from. Shenema, the Pasuk says that we quoted before, you will serve Hashem your God, and He'll bless your bread and your water. So therefore, va'avatem es Hashem alekeichem, do Kriyashma u'tfilah. That refers to serving Hashem by saying Kriyashma and davening. That refers to pas melach the kippin shamayim, when you eat your bread with salt in the morning and then you and you drink your water. So you do that. First you do you get up as early as possible to say Shema and to daven, and then the next thing after that is to eat breakfast. Then after that, as the pasuk continues, Hashem says, "I will take away sickness from among you." So therefore, so in other words, that's why the pasuk is first mentioning the other things that you do, and only then. So we see that that's the connection, that you do those things, and therefore that takes away mach.
Are they talking about just eating bread and salt?
Again, like Maharshal said, particularly we're talking bread with salt and water, because other kinds of foods may tend to confuse a person's mind.
So just that.
Just that,
breakfast.
It seems.
Just that.
It seems that we're saying just that.
That's
Yeah.
fascinating,
Yeah.
because I think that's a really good health tip.
Yeah. Okay, so now, so that was all a digression of Agadah, because we mentioned things that Rabbi Yehuda had told Rovin by Rav Nachman in connection with Dinim of agriculture, and now we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with other things that Rabbi Yehuda says also in connection with Dinim of agriculture and measuring land and whatever that we'll learn over Shabbos, Be'ez Hashem.
Okay.